Welcome to the Ignite Podcast, the only healthcare marketing podcast that digs into the digital strategies and tactics that help you accelerate growth. Each week, Cardinals experts explore innovative ways to build your digital presence and attract more patients. Buckle up for another episode of Ignite.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Ignite Podcast by Cardinal Digital Marketing. We have an old friend of the podcast joining us today, Ray Mina from Fresh Paint. And we are going to talk about the latest update to the HHS bulletin that dropped on March 18th. So a little bit more of HIPAA compliancy and how that impacts marketers in the healthcare space. And I guess, Ray, first of all, you know, we feel like we've been talking about this for months, years at this point, actual years at this point. Give us a little bit of the backstory. There was essentially OCR HHS dropped a bombshell on marketers at the end of 2022. What happened there and what did that mean? And how has that impacted us up until this point?
Yeah, by the way, you said we've been talking about this for a while. I just had a birthday. So when you said old, it really hit close to home. Yeah, like back in, I can't believe this is December 2022 when you and I first like started talking. Before that, right, like everyone in healthcare was pretty concerned about what are they doing on patient portals on authenticated pages, like where you have a whole bunch of patient information. And I think everyone, you'll probably agree, pretty much everyone I've talked to, nobody was putting web trackers into that kind of environment because they know it was a risk. In 2022, what HHS called out was, hey, by the way, that website that every single healthcare organization has, those unauthenticated pages, those landing pages, those could also be a risk of sharing PHI. Therefore, web trackers that don't sign business associate agreements, the legal framework that you know protects you sharing data, you can't do that anymore. That could be highly problematic. And that was something that nobody had been thinking of and nobody was operating in that context.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, like you mentioned, almost every page on every healthcare site is either an authenticated page that sits behind a login or a patient portal, but more likely is an unauthenticated page that talks about the provision of healthcare services. And this is what HHS specifically came out and said, hey, even if it's unauthenticated, but it's talking about the provision of healthcare services, you can't have these pixels that marketers, frankly, have become so reliant on. You know, it's almost like, I don't want to say that people have forgotten how to market, but the algorithm has started to play such a large role in the performance marketing equation. That was a seismic shift when we were told, hey, you don't get to play with this anymore. It's not for you. You can't use it in a compliant way. So once that happened, you know, what were health systems doing? What was the initial reaction to that bulletin? And just quickly, so before we get onto the next thing, you know, give us the kind of 30-second view of the fallout that then happened. And then, you know, obviously talk a little bit about how you guys have kind of, I don't want to give you too much kudos, but have essentially been, you know, driving the way and leading the main solution with the healthcare privacy platform piece.
I mean, it kind of depends, right? So there were organizations that were sued and caught up in class action lawsuits, and they were literally removing everything. So to your point, removing that data feedback loop and basically making all their tools ineffective. There were organizations that wanted to put their brand in front of this privacy issue that recognized that trust goes beyond the four walls of the clinic or the hospital. But even today, there are 70% of organizations haven't done anything. Like they haven't actually taken action. So it was a mix. There are lots of people getting in front of it, but there's still like a whole bunch of organizations that still today haven't really changed fundamentally what they're doing.
Yeah. Now there has been this first update to the HHS bulletin, but it's not like there was December 22 and then there was March 24, right? There have been sort of these punctuation points in between of either the FTC weighing in on the scenario or lawsuits that have happened, or, you know, whether it be hospital associations filing suit saying that this is not allowing us to essentially do our jobs effectively at driving new patient acquisition and hampering us. So it's not been this just like, you know, you've been here and then all of a sudden now the guidelines have changed. Things have evolved since 22. And I think one of the areas that I found interesting working with you have been in sort of areas around embedded video players, embedded maps. You know, it's not just pixels, right? It's any kind of solution that is that won't sign a BAA that may be getting that health context from a HIPAA-covered entity's website.
Yeah, there's been a lot of maturity in the discussion around this, because I think you're right here, Rich, is like the ship has sailed. This is about consumer privacy. Look, even Google, who has the most vested interest in collecting data, is killing third-party cookies. It's inevitable. They haven't totally cracked exactly what they're going to do, but that's inevitable. And I think that's what people are starting to realize now is, wait a second, there's a lot of stuff that we've been doing on our website that is potentially sharing protected health information with these destinations that don't have a legal framework in place and frankly will never put it in place. And that combination of PHI is like, who is it? It's Rich. And what kind of treatment is Rich pursuing, or has he pursued in the past? Like, that's just generally a no-no. And that starts to impact tools like embedded videos. You've got like context about health information in those videos, and it's sharing an IP address, which is a HIPAA identifier, with YouTube. You've got embedded maps. Like, if you just embed a map, a Google map on your website, it looks like an image. But when I visit that website, it knows the location that of that clinic. So if it's a specific enough treatment, like a oncology center, it's capturing my IP address. That's how it connects to Google Maps over the internet. That's also PHI in the eyes of Google. And you do not have a, you know, BAA with Google Maps. So it goes way beyond just direct response like Google search ads and analytics. You and I have talked about, there's a growing list of demand side platforms that you can run full funnel marketing strategies in programmatic advertising at the top of the funnel. You're not going to be able to measure that stuff without view through conversions. And in order to like measure view through conversions, you're going to need a bunch of context about that visitor and their journey. None of those platforms sign BAAs. So it's a pretty growing list of use cases and a pretty big full funnel advertising stack that is impacted by this guidance.
Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about HHS Bulletin 2, the long-awaited sequel. I think a lot of healthcare marketers, V2, yeah. I think a lot of healthcare marketers were sitting here thinking, oh man, I hope they just renege on V1, right? But that was not the case. And I think it's interesting that, what are we now, almost 18 months later, and essentially they haven't really changed the position massively. I mean, there's been these the sort of five major updates, which we're about to get into. But what's clear from the updated guidance is they're not going to renege on this. They're going to help to provide more clarity around what is a compliant solution and how marketers can take a path forward. But the onus is, my perception, and I'd love to obviously get your thoughts on this, is the accountability and the onus has very much been put on the HIPAA-covered entity and the marketing teams and the compliance teams of those HIPAA-covered entities by HHS saying, yep, we understand that you've got to do these things. We understand the world that you operate in. But in order, there is this sort of middle ground, which is to leverage HIPAA-compliant MarTech to essentially achieve some of the things that you were doing before without falling foul of HIPAA compliance. So just give us the brief. What were the sort of the five major updates that this bulletin covered off on?
Yeah, let's get into that because it removes some of the ambiguity. But before I get into that, I want to call out one thing that we're not going to spend a ton of time on today, because this is up to you to talk to your legal and compliance team. There's a section at the end that wasn't in the original guidance on enforcement. So they go to great length to describe what enforcement means. And in that enforcement, it's no longer just about assessing the risk. They actually have a call out for mitigating the risk. So the framing that I took from that is like, oh, they're actually signaling to the market that they expect you to do something about this. And that was a new thing. So let's talk about where there's a lot of points of confusion over the last, you know, year and a half that we've been talking to people about. I think the most straightforward one, people, when we're talking to people about FreshPaint, they bring up consent management. You know, do you have a consent management feature? Do you integrate with consent management tools? We do integrate, but consent management does not help with HIPAA, and HHS was really clear in this update. So they said that consent managers do not replace written HIPAA authorization. Like, next time you go to the doctor's office and you fill out that written form and sign your life away, that's written HIPAA authorization. That cute little like allow cookies button on a website and a healthcare organization, that doesn't count. So there was confusion around if that would be helpful. It's not related to HIPAA. Doesn't mean consent management tools don't help with consumer privacy in other areas. But if you're doing it to regulate like HHS kind of guidance, yeah, it's kind of a waste of time for you, according to the regulators.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, we had clients who were coming to us saying, well, I'll just put it in my privacy policy that I use these tracking technologies. And it's like, nope, can't bury it in your privacy policy. And now it's, yeah, can't even if they consent, that's not enough. That doesn't meet the threshold. Yeah.
Yeah, it might be a good idea and to have a privacy policy and look out for people, but it's not going to meet these HIPAA regulations that you're trying to cover. You know, the other one, Rich, that came up a lot, because when we first connected, the whole market was migrating over to GA4. And in GA4's terms of service, they said that even though they may be collecting IP address, that they're not storing it. And that gave everyone the opening that, oh, then GA4 must be okay to use because they're not storing this IP address. HHS spelled this out and said that the sharing of IP address with a tool where there's not a BAA is all it takes. It doesn't matter what they do with the data, if they delete it, if they don't store it for a period of time. You just can't share it if you don't have a BAA in place. So that removes the notion of like GA4 not storing an IP is okay. It's not okay because they got it in the first place.
And then, not confusingly, but just to avoid any confusion, there was another update around IP as well, right? Which was to say that IP addresses by themselves are on unauthenticated pages are not considered PHI. So help me square that circle, Ray. For those of us who are not quite as technologically gifted as you are, my friend, how can it be a problem if GA4 is receiving an IP address, but then at the same time HHS is saying, well, IP addresses by themselves are not PHI?
Yeah, let's
connect. It feels a little contradictory.
It does. But that's where we have to go back to what is the intent here. So, and let's separate the two, because I think what caused all the confusion in the original guidance around IP address, because people have been walking around thinking IP address is PHI, is that HHS had two carve-outs. They talked about authenticated pages. You're a patient in a portal. There's a boatload of health context about you. And they talked about unauthenticated pages, which are website visits. Not a logged in state. You don't necessarily have my history in that context. And what they said was on authenticated pages, IP address alone could be enough to constitute PHI because of all the associated data along with it.
Right.
On anonymous website visits on unauthenticated pages, they said you need two things. You need an identifier like IP address. There's others like email and, you know, device ID. And you need context about my health journey. Am I looking for a doctor? That's PHI on an unauthenticated page. You need both. And so GA4 is clearly getting all the potential health context because you're capturing all the page visits. You're capturing conversions. Like, where did this person go? And then if you combine that with an IP address, you have the identifier plus health context. Now, that's why you can't share an IP address with Google Analytics, because you know that they're always going to have, you know, page URLs and form fills and things like that.
Yeah. And so where this, you know, not to get too technical, but where this potentially helps to clarify some stuff is more around the offline conversion passback. If we want to send an IP address to an advertising platform to try and match an ad exposure, you were mentioning view through before, an ad exposure to that person on their patient journey. But what it essentially still means is you can't have any kind of pixel-based technology that could collect IP address and also get the health context on any page that talks about the provision of healthcare services. So you can still use them on your careers page, but that's about it, folks. You know, they can't be used anywhere else around that is a patient-centric page.
The good news about what you just brought up, though, like, you know, and saying it, I want to say it again, because it's a big unlock for advertising and healthcare, which is IP address alone is not PHI. It has to be in combination with your previous healthcare or seeking new healthcare. And the unlock here is that ad platforms, they do require HIPAA identifiers to work. Ad click ID, email for view through conversions, as opposed to third party cookies, you could use IP address. You can make those things work without any health context. Like, the ad platform doesn't need to know anything about that visitor's journey through your website at all. They don't need to know any page visits. So in this context, you could make ad platforms, all those sophisticated bidding algorithms that help us really juice our results, you could make those work now, because HHS has literally said, if you just send an IP address, if you just send an ad click ID, if you just send a HIPAA identifier, and there's no other health context, that's not PHI. So you are no longer running afoul of the regulator. This was a very slippery slope for lawyers as they were trying to read this stuff and interpret it. But I think this call out really helps unlock a lot of things that we need to do in healthcare, which is like reach our consumers.
And it's probably showing to some extent that HHS and OCR are listening, in particular to some of these health systems and their concerns and health platforms, and obviously don't want them to go out of business or not be able to reach the right patients, et cetera. It feels very much like they're trying to strike that right balance between people doing the function of a business function of marketing whilst also ultimately protecting that patient privacy.
Yeah, we don't need to get into the lawsuit against the government right now that everybody is anticipating the outcome of, but this is kind of proof that HHS intent isn't to remove the ability to use these channels and reach these consumers. They're just trying to help healthcare organizations strike the balance of how do you deliver those results, but do it in a way that protects the privacy. I don't think that's not a bad thing directionally that we should be aiming for in healthcare.
And so now we come on to the most exciting update for you, Ray.
Not for me, for healthcare, yeah.
For healthcare. Which is, and I hate to use the label CDP because I know you guys are a healthcare privacy platform, but CDPs, clarification is that CDPs that have a BAA in place with the HIPAA covered entity and will essentially ensure that data is protected, that the PHI that's being collected is protected under that BAA, they are acceptable to use as an alternative to those kind of tracking solutions that we were using before, right? So if I install FreshPaint on my website and FreshPaint is collecting all the events, you know, someone schedules an online appointment, someone submits a form submission, et cetera, and then, and I don't want to describe your platform better than you can, obviously you can do it much better than I can, but then essentially we're bifurcating the personal identifiable information and the health information and then only sending one or the other to those downstream platforms. HHS is saying, yes, that's great. That's fine. This is a compliant path forward that will allow you to do those things that you were doing before.
Yeah, I swear we didn't spend any lobbying dollars in Washington to get HHS to put this into. I honestly, in all my career marketing, I've never seen a regulator build a marketing funnel for a brand, but here we go. I think the big takeaway is for folks in healthcare, we have a whole bunch of customers. We have some joint customers using FreshPaint and your services. They made a choice to use a platform like FreshPaint to replace native pixels and shift from this world of third-party data where you just ship everything away to a world of first-party data where you collect it safely, then choose how to best use that data to improve results. It's a huge validation for all those legal and compliance teams within those organizations that they made the right call and now they're way ahead of the curve. Yeah, this is really, if you just step away from product for a second and you just look at a framework of doing this, the main takeaway is like you can no longer, there's validation of like a way to do this. So there's not really an excuse to continue to just use these native pixels that are freely sharing data, whether you use FreshPaint or not. Like HHS is giving you the clue that remove those pixels and put in a tool that safely collects the data through a BA supported platform. And then gives you ability to govern the flow of that data so that you can choose to not send PHI to a Google Ads or a Google Analytics. You have to break apart those pieces and make sure that these platforms don't get both components. This is a huge unlock for healthcare because people have been like, what are we supposed to do? The lawsuit literally says we're not able to like do our jobs without these tracking technologies. It's kind of a BS lawsuit now because HHS is given away to like, go do that, like keep doing what you're doing, just don't use the native trackers.
And I mean, obviously that could be one significant reason why HHS has done that, right? Which is to mitigate the potential impacts of that lawsuit. Without asking a contentious question, do you feel like this could also be opening the door to more vociferous enforcement? That and, you know, this in conjunction with the clause that you were mentioning earlier around the burden around mitigation now, is this HHS saying, okay, guys, we've had the last 15 months to sort of react to this, figure it out. Yes, there's been some high profile cases, but in reality, it's really been class action attorneys on their own volition who have been going after these systems. Is HHS potentially now sounding the alarm and saying, we've given you a path forward. Now we are going to start to get serious around enforcement.
I have two thoughts here. I think you're onto something in that enforcement section that's in the guidance when they call out that you need to mitigate this. That did come across to me. I can't read their minds and I wasn't in the room and they won't talk to me. But
even though you were lobbying them,
even though I was lobbying with all my packs of bubble gum, right? My big lobbying dollars. We have no money to lobby regulators. That's for sure. That's for the bigger boys and gals. I think that enforcement section was a little bit of a signal that like what their expectations are. But my second thought is, does it even matter? Because like you just called it out, like lawyers are activated. Class action lawsuits. I'm even seeing really small clinics and systems that I never thought the lawyers would go after. They're going after them. And we know we have a couple of customers who are caught up in multiple class action lawsuits, one of which I know is involved with five at the cost of about $3 million a pop. And so even if no damages are assessed, even if a regulator never does anything, they're spending $15 million to defend themselves. What if they could use that money to promote access to healthcare or promote better outcome? Like there's probably a lot more they could do with that, those dollars. So I think that doesn't really matter anymore. Like the class action lawsuits are coming. I think HHS is probably more interested in having healthcare mitigate this and prevent these kind of PR nightmares than in actually like punishing people with like fines and damages. But that enforcement section does kind of like raise the question for me if they're sending a signal.
And it's interesting too, right? As you mentioned, you know, some of the cost to defend these class action lawsuits exceed some of the major fines and penalties that we've seen handed down by FTC. So,
yeah,
you know, that FTC is certainly, and OCR and HHS is certainly not the only threat. And actually, they don't even seem to be the largest threat, although obviously, you know, you should be aware of the fact that is a potential threat. Just to wrap this up, then, it feels like there's definitely been some clarification, but not much has changed from the recommended path forward, which is get the right MarTech in place to continue doing what you're doing previously in a HIPAA compliant way. What do you think, just as a final sign off, were the motivations then around this clarification? What do you think HHS was trying to achieve with this clarification? And what is the key takeaway that marketers should be deriving from this as they move forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think the charitable take here is what you said, that HHS, and I know this because I've talked to organizations that talk to HHS, that their teams have talked to the regulators. And I'm guessing they took a lot of that feedback of where these points are confusing. Like we don't really, the way you wrote this, we don't understand that, because where they clarified, and it's not perfect, by the way, there's probably even further clarification they can make to shore this up. But where they clarified the points, those were the areas that people had the most questions. We've been involved with like 500 of these conversations. So we've heard about them. We literally scratched our head for 3 months around consent management. Like, should we build this right away? How is this helping with HIPAA? Because we didn't get it. So I think their intention here is really to listen to the healthcare organizations and continue to advance the conversation to, you know, try to improve, you know, people's ability to take action. And I think that's the call to action. Okay, we spelled it out for you a little bit more clearly. It's not true that you can't move forward. Here's some ways that you can like interpret this more accurately. Here's some solutions that you can leverage. And, you know, we are expecting that you're going to mitigate it. I would say that if you're in the 70% of people that haven't taken action yet, probably a great time to start having a serious conversation with your legal compliance IT team. At least do an audit of your website. At least understand what tools you have that are putting you at risk. At least talk internally about how much risk are you willing to spend $15 million this year to defend yourself? If you are, and some could choose that because this is risk mitigation, fine. But if you're not, you should be aware that that's a potential thing you'll be faced with.
And you should weigh the fact that the implementation of these MarTech solutions cost a tiny fraction of that amount. Even if the lawsuit was six figures instead of seven, you're still a tiny outlay compared to that. And this is what's going to set you up. Ultimately, this is what's going to set you up for success and allow you to get back to doing what you were doing so well before, which is connecting with patients, driving them to high quality
care,
getting people healthy, which is the purpose of these organizations.
The way to think about this differently is if you do get sued or you do get fined by a regulator, there's an actual cost that you can measure it's going to be way, way more than investing in software. Number two, the PR disaster behind it is immeasurable. Like, I don't know how do you assess that, but it's going to be pretty costly to you. You're a healthcare brand. Trust is like paramount, and trust is declining for healthcare brands. So be careful there. But then step back a second and say, wait a second, I'm a marketing leader. It's super hard for me to get approval to do anything and buy any new tooling. What are all the strategic plays? Like, you guys are pros at building these full funnel marketing strategies for healthcare. I know a bunch of marketing leaders want to do that. You're going to need some better tooling to feed that stuff. Like, you're going to need to harvest first party data and be able to like get it to the right tool in a meaningful way to like actually make that work. So think about it as a strategic opportunity. Like, you can get the budget approval by telling legal you're going to save them, you know, potentially $5 million a year on lawsuits. And it's going to deliver those long-term strategic results that you haven't been able to get in the past because you couldn't get the tooling approved from a budget standpoint and you couldn't get it through like legal and compliance review. So I think it's an actual strategic opportunity for marketers.
Sounds like a killer cost saving exercise.
Right?
All right, Ray. Well, this has been awesome. By the way, you know, if anybody from OCR is listening, HHS is listening, please add a TLDR section to your... There's just a lot of words in there. Some of them are very long, have many syllables in. So, you know, for us more simple folk, it's hard to keep up. But thanks again, Ray, for your insight. It's always a pleasure to have you back on the podcast, as always. And we will chat soon, I'm sure, about all things compliance. Maybe the next bulletin will be out in the next 13 months and we can reconnect again.
We'll be back, but hopefully before then we like can get back to like actual do it marketing, right?
Exactly. All right. Thanks, Ray. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having us, Rich.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Ignite. Interested in keeping up with the latest trends in healthcare marketing? Subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review. For more healthcare marketing tips, visit our blog at cardinaldigitalmarketing.com.